Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Alley. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are up 20. Got to be up 20 every morning. Yesterday we had a huge move up, especially in the Russell was up like 3%. We're not sure. I don't know. Everybody knows I have a problem with all the way we're handling this, Kevin. I just hope that I am very wrong on how much and what I think it's going to end up being like, because I sure don't want to see that. But
well, Tom, the way we're handling this also has a problem with you, darn it.
I know.
So it cuts both ways.
You know what? This would all be solved. I wouldn't have any of these problems. And Maddie wouldn't have to listen to me and probably want to shoot me half the time. All this problem would be solved if I was Maddie's age and didn't go through the stuff and actually see it happening the time before. And just never dreamed we would tempt that alligator again, and yet
that you could be blissfully ignorant.
Yeah, I would just be blissfully ignorant. I just can't even the thought of going through the early 80s, late 70s, and people can have their opinions about unions and whatever, without any sort of COLA clauses for a lot of the workers, cost of living increases for those who know what those adjustments for those who don't know what that means, and without the fact that you it's savers, people that saved up money for their life, could put it in the bank and stay at least even probably ahead of inflation. The thought of that, going through that mess and that not being there, I can't even imagine the harm you're going to do to people. I mean, I hope I don't have to imagine. I mean, I don't see it, but these guys, and I honestly think, Kevin, if they recognize what I'm seeing even a little bit and pulled back some, they could get away with that the economy grows into the stock prices, but they're not backing off at all. We're still right now pushing 14% money supply increase over the last 13 weeks after 25% last year. But they're not stopping now. They're still buying stuff. Why they're still buying bonds, I have no idea. And now they're looking for another stimulus plan. And if I see one more buffoon, and I'll use that term on purpose, talk about this being fiscal stimulus, when they're not borrowing money from anybody, they're just getting it right from the Fed's printing press. Why do we have to get lied to all day long? I mean, why can't we just tell people the truth? This has gotten so far away from telling. I mean, I know politicians have always been like that to a certain extent, but this is extreme, I think. Or maybe
I wonder how. I'm just spitballing here, so you know, maybe I'm off base. But is it possible that the politicians aren't lying any more than they always have, but it's the bureaucracy that's lying more than ever? The appointed,
yeah,
you know, the career people.
The career people, I think, are. You know, even the stuff with the, the vaccine. I get stuff every day that I read, which doesn't make me an expert. I'm not a doctor, but, I mean, the idea that people are now telling everybody, oh, yeah, you don't need your second shot for, like, 2 months. Kevin, we're talking about, and I hope they're right. But I've read everything that's crossed my desk, or internet, or whatever you want to call it. Nobody crosses your desk anymore. But the idea that this thing is on a string, no matter, we're talking about a vaccine, it's been put together in less than a year. The testing has been very specific, and of course nobody even reads what they're actually testing. So people say stuff that on TV that you wonder where the hell they found it. Because the testing has been very specific. And what happened? What's been happening in a lot of places should not surprise people. How do we make it this far without the general population knowing that if you have the disease, it's still spitting out of your system for up to about 100 days or 90 days? Nobody knows that. Why is that a secret, Kevin? Who's decided that we can't handle that truth? It's no big deal.
And we see this, Tom. We're seeing this in many cases. So, as an example, both in Pennsylvania and in California that I'm aware of, and it's probably true elsewhere too, but people have specifically requested, used the FOIA process to request some of the data that's used in the decision-making process on virus-related restrictions. And they're getting fought.
Yeah, they're getting fought.
It gets selectively released, or it just doesn't get released at all. And when you go and follow the legal process for getting it, they say no anyway, and they stonewall it.
Kevin, it's somehow we're seeing the absolute worst in human nature, and maybe it's because of the communication stuff of today. The idea that people lay around at home, essentially, you know, I'm not accusing anybody of not working or anything, but
except I just did.
but I mean, obviously, somebody has time. To be on the airwaves every day. I read something about this, you know, somebody said something on their Facebook thing that was considered racist, so they're dumping them out of their, you know, whatever, their job on some TV show, and who knows, it probably was something stupid the guy said, but how do people have time to try and to comb the airwaves for stuff people say? I mean, I work all day. How do I get to do that? I mean,
well, and is there a statute of limitations too? You know, how far back do we go? It's partly the time to do it, but, you know, I saw some outrage about one of Biden's appointees because of something she wrote when she was like 20 years old and wrote for the Harvard Crimson. I guess that's their newspaper. It's a student publication. Now, you know, I may not like it, and she may be no different now than she was then, but I don't know that. But boy, I don't want to be held accountable for a lot of the crap I did when I was 20 and some of the stuff I said when I was 20. It's a ridiculous standard, and if we're going to roast everybody, how often have we seen this? How often have we seen somebody go back to high school social media for something?
Yeah.
Didn't that happen with Josh Hader when he made the All-Star team?
What happened to the judge?
That's right, it did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so he was a meathead when he was in high school. And so was I. You know, I was a different kind of meathead. But, you know, people can grow and people can change, and to just roast them for that is just beyond
me. Well, obviously, even though I was raised Catholic and, you know, I don't have a problem with that, I'm surely no biblical scholar, but one that always stuck was the one where without sin, cast the first stone. Nobody wants this kind of scrutiny on themselves, yet they're happy to do it to other people. That's the part I don't get. Would you want somebody following you around? I mean, I got a couple of, I'll say, good guys, but knucklehead buddies from the trading floor. And, you know, because it was a different place. It was very politically incorrect. And if somebody gets caught by a policeman or some kind of, gets ensnared, like the thing that happened to Elliot Spitzer. And I said, well, would you like that happening to you? Would you like it if a policeman followed you around all day? Oh, I don't do anything wrong. But what if he did? Well, I'd be pissed off. okay. I mean, this whole idea. I've always looked at things. How would I like it if somebody did that to me? And if the answer is I wouldn't, I try not to do it to somebody else. But that's a very simple rule, Kevin. You should learn that by the time you're 7, for God's sake. Do you want somebody going through everything that you've been? Do I want somebody going through? As much as I try to be, and again, I don't always succeed, as much as I try not to say anything that I would regret on the show, I'm going to say that if somebody went over every single show for the last, how long between you and Jack or Jay, what do you think, maybe 20-some years? Could you take something out of context and make me sound like an idiot?
Or even the last 2 weeks.
Or even the last
2 weeks. I was going to say, yeah, this week we probably could.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been pretty good this week. A couple of weeks ago, not so good, but this week I was pretty. The only thing bad is because
you know that you and I got into a heated as we'd ever get email exchange about something completely different while you were getting beat up by the listeners.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize it at the time. So, you know, I'm sitting there going, "What's eating him?" Okay, I was just piling on, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, it had to do with the part where I was just trying to say to people when you go back in history and you start lighting people up for 200 years ago or 300 or 500, you need to spend a little while to try and figure out what was what was going on in the era.
I mean, what was life like? And I knew exactly what you were trying to say when I heard it, and so the complaints you were getting, I thought were pretty meat-headed, but nevertheless, they were what they were. And but I knew that, but I didn't realize that you were getting hammered on that. And so here I am challenging you on something else, only to find out, oh God, I just piled all over this poor guy.
Well, the interesting, when I first heard of something like that, we had to take a theology and a philosophy course in Notre Dame. I didn't like them too much, but one of the parts where the guy gets to the thing about where somebody in class, they were talking about revenge. And a guy in class said something about, well, the Bible says, what, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth or something like that? And the priest goes, you're missing the whole point. And the kid goes, what are you talking about? It says right there, he says, if you studied the whole period piece, you'd realize that revenge before that was very uneven. And if somebody cut your eyebrow, you could take their eye. this was a revelation to the good side, not the bad side, because of the times. That you can only, that revenge should only be even, not be way over the top. And nobody knew that in class at the time. I mean, we're not biblical scholars, but a lot of the stuff you see people write from the Washington's era or Lincoln's era, the stuff they said, it sounds maybe not even what we'd like today. Was such a revelation in their time to the good side. And if you don't spend a minute thinking of that, I mean, what Lincoln said was so different. For God's sake, he was the closest politician to, like, St. Paul, for God's sake. That the stuff he wrote was so different than people even thought. And now you go back and say he didn't go far enough.
Yeah, well, we're taking his name off the score.
Yeah, well, he didn't go far enough. Well, for God's sake. I mean, right? I mean, you can only push society as far as it's willing to go, right? And if you do that,
and maybe a little beyond.
I mean, there's no way on earth that Roosevelt was going to let everybody know what he knew about what was going on in Nazi Germany in 1937, and get people fired up to go to war. It was impossible to do. 38, even 39, right? Maybe even 40. But what do you do? You're not going to get there. You're not going to get there until the time is right. He pushed as much as he could, right? Maybe he could have done better, whatever. Now everybody's...
Well, and that's the other part of it is, well, maybe he could have done better. Maybe Lincoln could have done better. Who knows? I mean, you could probably make a case for that. But did he think he could do better?
I think he did, because he was depressed.
Would he have killed the whole initiative by trying to push too far? There's a whole lot to unpack in there, and people just don't want to hear it. We're in this absolute time right now, and it's eesh.
Yeah, it's a kind of. Speaking of eesh, boy, the Hawks won last night. I actually sat there and enjoyed watching them play.
They're both the Hawks and the Bulls are getting a lot easier to watch lately. They've moved into the don't entirely suck category.
Well, the Hawks are just three or four or five players short. I mean, we know that. And Manny and I were talking about
that. They've got some young guys that, have some ability and a little bit of speed, and they're kind of interesting now.
Some teams are just way smaller than. The other guys just look like it's a pro team playing against a college team, but they got some guys that are decent. You're right. And a couple of the goalies look like they're halfway decent. They might be pretty good going under. Are they all like first or second year guys, Manny? I mean, I know Subban's little brother's young, but this one guy begins with an H. He looks like he's pretty good. But, I think it's so weird not playing any of the Canadian teams. I mean, the whole. What's the deal? You can. Somebody was telling me, actually, one of the ladies who works in the barn upstairs. She's, but I guess you can come here from Canada and go back. We just can't go there or something, is it?
Yeah, I think so. I sort of lost track of the whole travel issue.
So there's no passenger flights at all?
Because I don't have a personal interest in it, I think.
But there's no passenger flights at all from, like, Chicago to Toronto or Montreal? I don't think there are there? This is weird.
And we're going to kill. We're going to do our best to knock off the airline industry, and whatever will survive will just be a monopoly, or we'll have government airlines.
I ran into a young lady the other night, a flight attendant. She's still getting paid and hasn't worked in 9 months because of the government money they're throwing at the airlines to pay these people.
Well, and keep this in mind too. There's a plan out there to require testing before you get on an airplane. You have to take a test. Well, what does a test cost? On margin, not much, but you know what are we charging for tests? $100 or something like that. We're gonna pile that cost onto the cost of flying.
Well, people,
somebody's gonna have to eat it. I'm not sure who.
If people test positive for as many as 2, maybe 2.5 months after they've already had it and have the antibodies and are no danger to anybody, how are we gonna make allowances for that, or are we?
Haven't thought it through, Tom.
But is anybody
stop us from doing it?
No, will not stop us from doing it.
You can, by the way, travel to Canada from. It says you must be traveling directly from the U.S. or for a non-discretionary purpose, and then they have like 500 rules to define that.
But I mean, we couldn't. Well, Arnold, we couldn't drive up to Toronto to see a hockey game. That would not be considered.
That would not be. That would qualify as discretionary.
Yep.
So, in other words, you have to work there or something?
Well, we don't have time to read all of these bullet points underneath it, but yeah, you can do it, but you have to have a good reason, basically. So yeah, you probably can't just drive up there for fun. I don't think the Detroit people are going across to Windsor or whatever to gamble right now.
What if you met some potentially hot girl on the internet? Is that a good reason?
I mean, good enough for me, but
God.
Only if she's really a girl. In fact, only if she's real.
Okay. Right. Well, how do you know? Do you meet her?
Well,
right?
That's the thing. Both of those are getting tougher and tougher.
Oh God, it's kind of crazy. But Kevin, we're doing this thing, and back to what I started with, like Milton Friedman said, one of the biggest dangers of inflation is the first iterations of it feel so good. But then it gets to the point where you have to say, the thing that I've been, you know, a lot of stuff that everybody on the show, not just me, has been basically ragging about for a long time. When you let the industries combine and consolidate, it doesn't look so bad for a while. Okay, but we're entering this kind of perfect storm. I mean, right now, what do you suppose? I mean, I've had people, you know, call in and I run into people. We'll say that they were just someplace and something was like $10 2 weeks ago, and now it's like $15. I mean, it's getting like the stock market. I mean, if a stock is going up, we're not talking about, you know, going up, you know, 5% this year. It's going up 10% today, which is an absolute sign. But right now, what if? I mean, I would say that the Home Depot, the Menards, and the Lowe's, if they wanted to, they could raise all their prices. Not all. You got to leave a few out there to make people stupid by saying, well, the price of something is still the same spot. But you could raise all the prices of the plasterboard glue and the plasterboard tape and the screws and everything else. You could go up 10-15% in the next 2 months and nobody'd blink. I mean, the contractors would know. I mean, I would know because I've been doing some remodeling. But the not very many people would know. And you just. You can mess with. I mean, what do you think the prices have gone up in McDonald's with all the Ouija board that they call menu, the dollar menu, the dollar and a half menu? I mean, I'm going to say we went from
probably the value menu now, and the dollar menu concept is long gone.
Yeah, what I'm saying that the rapidity with which this can happen right now is something that I mean, all you have to do if you have some people who haven't done it yet. If you want to go out, if you want to see something, the restaurants that have managed to stay open, okay, and even, of course, it costs them to do so, you compare the price of dinner or breakfast from what it was a year ago, you'd be astounded. If it's not 20%, I'd be stunned. I mean, these numbers are jumping like there's no tomorrow. Cause you
yeah, and I agree with you, because I have been out for breakfast, and I've been out for lunch, and it's way higher.
I mean, the spread between... You try at any place that's even remotely decent, try and find a glass of wine for under $10. And I'm going to say that you can go anywhere to the Binnie's or the Wine Discount Center, which is now Vin. If you can't find and I know people are wine snobs and they have a better palate than me, but if you can't find a really decent bottle of wine for $10, $12, $13, I mean, you're not looking. So $10 a glass, we've gone from 3 to 1 to what, 5 on the pricing? And I know, a dude, he's been on the show, but he'll go nameless. He runs an Italian restaurant. Now, a couple of the guys from Pullman, when Pullman went under, went to work for restaurant purveyors and so forth. And at that time, if you bought a steak at like Gibson's or someplace, the going rate was that the price of the steak, if you paid $30 for it, steak should be costing the place $12. It should be 40%. And now the potatoes, if they threw those in and all the other stuff, should be on top of that. And that's how you gauge your pricing. Now, this guy tells me that in his Italian restaurant, because he uses regular clams, the highest price item he puts down for somebody, even more than veal, is $4.50, and he charges $24 for it. We're pushing 6 to 1, Kevin. I mean, I know it's, we've morphed to the point where it's sort of like in my business, the trading business. When I started in the business, and was on the SIBO committees and board, all people cared about was how many trades a day could our computer system handle. And little known, well, you'll be interested, that's what everybody else is, but little known fact is the basis of the
CPU. Was that a put down of some sort?
No. What I'm saying is, okay, you're a computer historian guy.
Just wondering. Yes, I know. Go on. Yeah, I actually am. I always like to take my classes on a walk down memory lane. So.
Well, the trade match system was always considered to be the key of the place. And could we do 1 million contracts? You know, could we do this? Well, the trade match system was put together in the early 70s. They basically, I won't say stole, bought, or did something. It was the United Airlines reservation system because it matched people to flights.
Yeah, the airline control program.
Yeah,
ACP,
and that's that. They matched trade to trade for people. Got to the same spot. Well, when you went a little later, the trades don't mean squat. It's the quotes became the rate determining step. How's that for a chemical term? So it wasn't how many. It was pieces of information you put out there. It had nothing to do with the trades. Is actually what jams the system up now. I mean, you've got how many bazillion stocks with how many bazillion strikes and changing the quotes all the time. That's your feed now. The trades are, that's easy, right? So, you know, the same thing happens all the way through, with all the other stuff that you see the Fed and everybody doing. I mean, you gotta be real careful that you at some point you change back and forth, and now the Fed is dumping money and playing with inflation. Where I'm going to say, I'll take a reach here. 70% of the economy is not competitive in a lot of ways, and some of it made worse because of the pandemic. Because surely restaurants and bars were competitive, but now they're not. Because what, 20% of them are open?
Yeah, the only ones that have grown are the chains,
or people that somehow had a huge area in the place, or were able to put a tent in the parking lot,
or places where they didn't shut them down. Too.
Yeah, or places where they didn't shut them down.
Florida's had a chance to grow. South Dakota's had a chance to grow.
But even in some of the suburbs here, and I won't mention which ones have been open, it's still very uneven. Some people had a big outside, some people didn't. Some people had no outside. Some people, the mayor said, the parking lot's all yours. Other people said, you're not paying for the parking lot, right? So it's very uneven. What you're left with is, you're talking, but I'm saying the more in the restaurant business now, it has nothing to do with what you eat is the cost. It has to do with, can we open the place? What's the lease? How many behinds can we get in a chair per night? And we divide the amount of behinds we can get by something. And it doesn't matter whether you're getting a White Castle hamburger, it's going to be $25 because that's what they need for you to sit there for an hour and a half. It has nothing to do with what you eat.
So you're saying we've upended the market, which would have set pricing in a competitive market, and instead we've just thrown everybody into a cost plus model, which is terribly inefficient.
Right, exactly. So that's where we are. And the funny part was the
and who does operate on cost plus?
Monopolist,
cartel. Monopolist, and they're a monopolist government.
Yeah. You know who. Here's a quick one. when one of the guys, one of my professors at the University of Chicago, actually was, they had kind of a one-off class, Kevin, where they, instead of teaching you, you know, rote finance and rote accounting, they actually had a class on sort of like practicality or some, whatever you want to call it. And this guy was, he was the oddest duck, but boy, he had some of those, he was doing work for hospitals where they're trying to figure out, you know, whether a hospital is good or bad, and they were using regression analysis and all these new mathematical techniques. I don't know how new they were, but he asked everybody, he goes, and these are guys like me that were really good at like cost accounting, and that's what I always really was fascinated by. But he said, how do you think a hospital decides what their costs are? And everybody goes, I don't know. You know, basically, he goes, they take all the money they spend without any sort of discipline whatsoever, other than if it's available. And at the end of the year, they figure out how many nights were there, people spent there, and they divide one and the other, and that's your cost per night. And everybody's going, you got to be kidding me. And I bet it's the same today, Kevin. But it's the same today.
And on the revenue side, what's the revenue? Well, the revenue is whatever we can get the insurance company to pay us.
Or whatever our kick is from the foundation this year, you know, whether they get, you know, $1 million from the Northwestern Foundation or something, I guess that's considered revenue too.
I went through that with outpatient surgery. That goes back to the 90s where I just had something done with a toe, and the doctor, you know, I asked him how much it's going to cost because I have a deductible here. I want to know how much it's going to cost. And he said, well, it sort of depends. I'm going to put in a big number to the insurance company. They're going to tell me what they cover. Then I'm going to adjust it down to whatever they'll cover.
Yeah, the plan, the amount of paper that went back and forth.
That's economically sound.
Yeah, that's economically sound. And but the weird part was it has some practical consideration because I think who the hell was in office at the time? I remember that later on I saw the iteration of it. You and I didn't because we never had any babies. We never birthed no babies. I think you used to spend, 5 days in the hospital if you had a baby. This is back in late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, okay, and I think it was Reagan, said, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to pay for it. We're going to only spend 4 days. So everybody's maternity area was set up for the amount of births in the neighborhood or area. So he ended up with essentially 20% of the beds empty. But after a year, the way the guys did their math, it cost you the exact same amount. So they said, okay, now we need to go to 3 days. You end up at the same place because you're dividing one into the other. And if you have an empty bed, doesn't matter, right? It's how many, it's not available nights, it's nights with somebody's fanny in the bed. I mean, it's insane what you can do with
and
numbers.
And now they just come out to the parking lot and deliver in the car for you.
And charge the same amount.
Oh, no more.
Or more. I mean, S&P futures up 19, NASDAQ futures up 52. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamales, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us, S&P Futures up. We have labor numbers coming out today. We were giddy the other day of only 775 on the unemployment applications, man. Is that good, or is it? That's one of those that's better than expectations, so it must be good type of thing. S&P futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 49. Dow futures up 146. Individual stocks in the Dow. Let's see, what do we got up? We got Johnson & Johnson up 259 as their vaccine continues to make its way through the system. JP Morgan up 1.25. United Health up 224. Those are the movers in the Dow. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 40.3%, FTSE up 6.1%, CAC up 60, that's a full 1%. We're in Asia, Nikkei up 437, it's 1.5. Just keep driving them up here. In Shanghai up, down 5.1. Hang Seng up 175.6. So pretty much rallies over there except for the Shanghai. This is a review of yesterday, Dow up 332, S&P up 41, NASDAQ up 167. 1.2%, but I think the biggest one was the Russell, which had to be close to 3%. Bonds, 1.16, continuing to go up. My best position I have for my people is the we're short the bonds, so we've been making some money every day on there. Wonder how long we can keep riding that one, or when I got a bail, I'm not sure. The Bund, oh, look at this, minus only 0.43. It's about as least negative we've seen in a long time in Japan. Pushing is 0.06, 0.058. So, again, everybody's, these interest rates are creeping up. Oil up 58 cents. So is oil prices. That's a full 1%. Brent up 65 cents, 59.49. Natural gas up 8 cents, 302, Maddie. Think anything to do with how freezing it is outside? I think it probably does. RBOB up 2 cents, 166. We've got gold bouncing back over 1800 today, 1270, but still a long way from the 1950 or where it was a few weeks ago. Silver up 38 cents to 26.62. Copper up 4 cents, 360. Wow. And platinum up $18, 1121. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues already on the area expressways. We have an issue on the outbound Kennedy, it looks like. In fact, it's just been cleared. There was a stalled vehicle on the outbound Kennedy just before Nagel Avenue that was causing some congestion and some slowdowns. That apparently has just been cleared, but there is some congestion on the outbound Kennedy as you get out near O'Hare and past O'Hare, that area, so keep that in mind. No issues on the inbound side. Eden's looking okay. Eisenhower's been quiet. Stevenson, there's a crash out to the southwest on the northbound side of the Stevenson just before Joliet Road. That's exit number 268, so that's causing us some delays with crews on the scene working to get that crash cleared. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good. Down south, there was some black ice reported. LaGrange Road on the southbound side just before Laraway Road. That's right near County Line Road down there. There is some icy conditions as we had the wet snow yesterday afternoon. That was kind of a snow-rain mix where we didn't get a ton of accumulation, but it did come down for a while, and all of that wetness froze as soon as the temperatures dropped last night. So now there's all kinds of icy conditions, so keep that in mind, especially on the side streets and bridges and off-ramps and things like that. Everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today. Today is day one of a miserable run of cold weather. The farthest the weather people look ahead is 10 days. Well, Chicago's not going to even come close to coming above freezing for the next 10 days. We know that. For the next 7 days, we won't hit 20 degrees. And it will be either at zero or below zero overnight almost every night for the next 7 days at least. Could be longer. Today, we'll reach a high of 16 with wind chills in the low single digits. Right now, it is 12 degrees with a wind chill of -6. So not a great one today.
So all the ice and snow we got piled up is going to be here for a while.
It ain't going nowhere. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, the Blackhawks topped the Hurricanes last night 6-4. Coyotes beat the Blues 4-3. Bulls were off. They're at Orlando tonight to take on the Magic. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. The Suns were off as well. They'll host the Detroit Pistons tonight at 7 p.m. Arizona time. Chief.
The story we were talking earlier, we're going to talk about sports here in a minute, but the story we were talking about earlier that Lincoln didn't do enough, that reminds me of, we had, Digger Phelps, one of our reunions, Kevin, Digger Phelps, who was a coach at Notre Dame for 20 years basketball, he evidently right before, Ted Hesburgh died, they were pretty tight, I guess. So Hesburgh was one of these guys that got, you know, 24 hours out of every day, whether he agreed with it or didn't. I mean, the dude had an amazing energy. He would, what he used to do, Kevin, he used to return 200 letters a day or some incredible number.
The man was a machine.
Yeah, and so Digger, as he's retired, you know, he's done some charitable work and everything. So evidently he goes to meet Hesburgh, and he's telling everybody the story. He goes, first of all, he never called him Digger. It was Richard. Right? So Digger's saying to him, well, you know, Father, I'm working with this charity and that charity. And he says, well, you know, what else are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, how many charities? And he goes, a couple. And he goes, Richard, not enough. That's not enough. You can do a hell of a lot worse. and Digger's like, yeah, but I'm doing this. Richard, what did I just tell you? It's not enough, buddy. You got more left in the tank. You could be doing twice as much. But he didn't say, I'm pulling your name off the basketball wall. Name me anybody in life who couldn't have done better.
Me.
I've seen you on the basketball court. I don't know about that.
That's true.
There's always something you could have done better.
In every other sport except baseball, baseball and softball. In baseball, I just couldn't hit a curveball, so that made me a softball player early on. But in every other sport, I was a football player playing that sport.
Oh, God. So,
you know, hockey, I was a football player playing hockey. Basketball, I was a football player playing basketball.
Let's go through that only with the teams for Sunday, since we don't have Colin on today. Well, what's the line? How many people are going to be there? Is the halftime show going to, it's not going to be inside, I don't know. Well, what's going on? I haven't really paid much attention to it.
Matt will know the line. I think they are going to have 25,000 fans there.
25,000 fans is correct. And the line right now, it started out as Chiefs -3 and was that for a while. It recently got bumped up to Chiefs -3.5, and that's where it stands right now.
Are you surprised there? I thought it would have been more.
I would have thought so, too. There's a lot of sharp money apparently coming in on Brady and the Bucks to keep this close, if not win outright, which seems crazy to me, but it's...
But a couple of things about that. First of all, just a tongue-in-cheek thing. Well, it's not tongue-in-cheek, a silly thing I heard this morning on one of the news shows. Some guy said, well, you know, the Chiefs have not seen a defense anything like the Buccaneers. Well, yeah, except they played in Week 12, so yes, they have.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I think our impression of the Chiefs is that they're an unstoppable offensive machine. And while they are good, and they have been, and they were really good in the conference championship game, in the game against Cleveland in the playoffs, they won 22-17. And, you know, so in fact, how many times do you think the Chiefs have scored under 30?
Is that the game what's his name got hurt?
He did get hurt in the second half, yeah.
Is there, did one of their,
in the divisional playoff?
Yeah.
Mahomes got hurt against the Browns in the second half.
Oh, yeah,
half,
yeah.
And
he
had a finish,
game.
Yeah.
That's right.
Did there,
how many times this year do you think the Chiefs have scored under 30?
I would say more than people would guess.
Yeah, but the impression is every time they feel like it, it sure looks like they could do something.
You can
you have that feeling, but we don't see them every single week. So
no.
That's part of why you get an impression. You see them in a selection of games, and it might be a great selection. It might not. But they've scored under 38 times.
Did they
scored under 25 five times.
Did they?
Under 20 once.
Did their one of their best linemen, did I see him with a Achilles tendon injury?
Yeah, their left tackle ruptured his Achilles and is out.
And he's probably their best guy. Well, one of the, I mean, he's...
Well, he is, and one of Tampa's big strengths is edge rushers.
I think I've watched it, you know, it's really hard. I mean, Maddie knows this stuff better than I do, but for me, I don't know if they're getting people back, if they're getting people off COVID, whatever they're doing. It sure looked like, for whatever reason, I watched, and I don't normally do this for a team, I watched the Bears because I have to talk about them on the show, but it seems like I watched Tampa, almost like four of the last 5 weeks. They were on some kind of national TV, weren't they, Manny? It seemed, anyway. But just from my observation, that defense was getting better and better every week. And I always thought, you know, the weird part is you look at these really high-scoring teams, the teams, a lot of the because the Bears had no offense. I think the Bear defense was as good as any of these, almost. They held some pretty
high. Yeah, it was pretty good this year. They had some letdowns, though.
Yeah.
That Detroit game, they collapsed. That loss to Detroit.
Well, they had some letdowns after the fell apart. After 15 three and outs by the offense. I mean, they were on a field.
The offense didn't entirely. They scored some points that game.
I'm saying they you very seldom could just go sit and rest if you're the defensive guy. Just saying. Anyway, but I mean, so I'm surprised it's 3.5, I guess is my point. So what's the over-under, Manny?
Let me check.
Now, please tell me that nobody can go in the skybox, because it'll be the 10th year in a row that you failed miserably to get us an invitation to the skybox, if they're open. So I hope they're not open, because we didn't get invited, that I know of.
Looks like the total's 56.5.
Oh, is that high? Or me?
Yeah, it's high. That's pretty high. I mean, it's not the highest I've ever seen, but it's pretty high.
It's 28 points each.
Yeah.
Don't some college games are like over 70?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's college games over 80.
Really? What's the highest you ever saw?
Probably 84 in,
really?
Like, one of those, you know, like MAC games where it's always like 56 to, you know, 49.
Where nobody
or some other mismatch where they probably don't even put it on the board.
Yeah.
Where they never make a tackle, one of those kind of games?
Right, it's just run and gun, up and down, and whoever has the ball last wins.
Oh God! Well, so, man, so how the hell do you put 25,000 people? What's the place hold? 70?
It's Raymond James. It probably holds 70, 80, something like that.
All right, so you're talking every third seat. No, people going.
Yeah, but they let people sit in clusters, so you can sit with your family.
Okay.
Yeah, Raymond James says that capacity is 66,000. I don't know if there's more than that for the Super Bowl, if they get more seats or not. But yeah, I guess about one-third full or a little over that.
Okay, so yeah, so 66,000, yeah, it's actually, what's that, probably 40%, something like that.
Well, since it's the last game.
But Florida's been open forever, so, you know, it's, I don't think that's way out of whack for the locale.
Well, since Florida's open and nobody cares if these guys get COVID next week, are we going to sell the stupid masks on the coaches when they pull them down to yell at somebody?
I put something up on, I tweeted. In fact, got, you know, or maybe, I sent it via email. Yeah. I get a kick out of watching basketball because every coach pulls down the mask to yell. So apparently yelling doesn't spread it. Normal breathing spreads it, yelling does not. And then the players go sit down, they get out their masks. And I see half of them have it just pulled down over their chin. So I'm pretty sure that they're blocking that spread from the chin that is so, you know, is so dangerous.
Well, you know what I feel stupid, really stupid when I wear mine, and if I go, if somebody says hello to you, or you go up to the cashier, and they're always real pleasant, you know, admirers or something, especially early in the morning, and you smile at somebody, and you realize they can't see a smile. Or give somebody.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of masks that are very thin. They're very thin veneer. You can see through them, and they're silver ion activated, so they will treat anything that you're breathing through them. They cost $30 each, but you know they're reusable, and you can recharge them just by throwing them in the microwave. And the point of it is, it covers my face. I can breathe through it, so I don't have my glasses fogged up, and I can smile at people, and they know it.
Yeah. Otherwise, so it's who else is out on
because,
the?
Because what we're doing here is we're killing so much of the human interaction that happens just by your facial expressions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is just so not normal.
Well, not to mention we can't identify people with the 90 bazillion cameras we have in Chicago for like carjacking and stuff. We can't identify people because they're wearing masks.
Yeah, they're working on that technology though. This is helping them. This is helping the overlords develop all new technology so that you can't cover your face.
Well, I'm all for even though for most people, including myself, it wouldn't be a good show. I'm all for people in Chicago now to walk around naked, even on a day like this, because I don't want people with loaded guns standing next to me somewhere. And I don't.
I think that's a good idea. Although there's a whole lot of people I don't want to see naked.
I know, but I mean,
for safety, we probably should.
Well, no, it's not whether or not it's safety or not. It's I get to say that because I just don't feel comfortable.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just don't. So I get to tell. It's like one of Audrey's friends, and she's got most of them are right wingers, but there's a couple that aren't. And I mentioned to somebody about. I said, you know, one of these days. How far can you stretch this? I just don't feel comfortable. I said, it's seemingly fairly obvious now. And let's say 20 years from now, we can't find a terrorist. Let's hope the world gets better. Are we still going to cavity search people when they go on planes? Well, yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable. TSA wasn't there. I said, but it's not really about whether you feel comfortable. It's about whether there's really a threat. And is it worth the bazillions of dollars we spend on 58,000 TSA people? Well, I don't care. I just don't feel comfortable. Well,
don't fly then.
Oh no, but I'm saying there's people that say.
Isn't that the easy solution? We can either inconvenience everybody else because you don't feel comfortable, or you can just opt out. Don't fly.
Well, but I mean, I have fortunately, I didn't have a bad bout with the COVID, and I have all the antibodies. So by any stretch, I'm really no threat to anybody. Okay. And I'm sure one in a bazillion chance that, I'm sure somebody somewhere will catch it from somebody. But people are very, very happy to tell me, I don't care whether you can give it to me or not. I just don't feel comfortable if you don't have a mask on. Well, okay. How far do you extend that? I don't feel comfortable unless you're naked. I want to see if you got a gun in there. I mean, that's an insane thing to say, but it would have been just as insane 2 years ago to say everybody had to wear a mask because people don't feel comfortable. It would have been insane 25 years ago to say you have to have people, cavity search you at the airport, before you get on a plane when you used to be able to walk right on, right? So it gets bizarre. But anyhow,
Well, it gets bizarre and we live in a world of untested hypotheses. So, Jen Psaki was up yesterday or the day before, I can't remember which day, talking about, well, even if you get vaccinated, you still have to, you're still going to need to wear a mask and keep distance. Well, what the hell kind of vaccination is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you might be able to spread the infection even though you can't get it. Well, first of all, there's no evidence of that either way. And that's what I mean. It's okay, that's a hypothesis. It's not tested. So we're now just going with conjecture as the basis for policy.
There's a little more to what he said, actually, and I think you would agree with me, although I never can really say that for sure. When they gave everybody these tests, and I'll keep this very brief, let's say that one was 36,000 people, one was 44, I believe. So let's say an average of 40,000 people. They gave 20,000 people the vaccine and 20,000 people the placebo and just sent them out. Do what you're doing. And let us know if you have symptoms. And the people who came back with symptoms, say there was 200 of them, 180 of them were people who had the placebo versus the vaccine. That's where you get your 90%, right? They did not chase after these people and every week give 40,000 people a COVID test to find out if they actually had it in their system. And if they did, could they give it to the next person? Most people assume, and I believe this, but I'm again not being a doctor, that if this thing keeps it down to the point where nobody is in the hospital and nobody dies, that if somebody gets a very mild case, it's probably still an effective vaccine. And also other stuff I've read that if people have a very mild case, they're fairly unlikely, not impossible, to pass it to somebody else. That, I think, is where we are, Kevin. That I believe, is the truth of the matter. So
that is the truth of the matter, but you used a lot of probables and you know, words like that. So it hasn't been tested and proven.
Well,
and
we don't use
maybes for policy.
Well, but the way the test was done and how quickly it was done, the stuff he's talking about and what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, has not been tested. So you can't equivocally say that somebody who has the vaccine couldn't have gotten infected, had such a mild thing. Could they conceivably have passed it to the next person? The answer is maybe, because it hasn't been tested. But it's not no, right? I'm saying it's very unlikely.
It is neither no nor yes.
Right. I'm saying, from what I've read, it appears to be very unlikely. But they didn't. If you had 5 years to do this, what you would have done is given maybe a lesser of a sample and follow them every week and find out exactly what happened to them. You don't just cast 40,000 people out in society and call me up if you're sick. I mean, that's about the most half-assed test I've ever come across, to be blunt, right?
Well, it is, and here's where I'm going with it. You know, I suppose there's also the possibility that you have an adverse reaction, and because you have a hair trigger temper, when you are uncomfortable because you start feeling bad, and there are enough adverse reactions to know that it happens, that then you become murderous. So once you get vaccinated, there's a chance you'll become a murderer. So we have to lock you up.
Well, that's
like taking the crazy logic to the nth degree, isn't it?
Well, but to agree with you, the study that somebody sent me, and thank you, whoever listener it was published by The Guardian in Britain. But some people, since the vaccines have been out about 20 weeks, right? So they took a group of people who got both the different people. Some got the Pfizer vaccine. Some people got the AstraZeneca. The Moderna one was not tested. They just, I don't know if they didn't have it or what. And they took a bunch of people that they knew had already had recently the COVID. Somebody like me or Kenny. And so they started doing antibody tests on all three of those groups every week. And after 20 weeks, the people who've had it before, people like me, the antibodies are still going strong because we're trying to figure out how long they're going to last. And they wanted the Pfizer and the individual people who had it are both about 90% strong. That, you know, some people didn't develop the antibodies as much as they should have, and that happens. The other one, the AstraZeneca, is more like 80%. So it's wearing off on a few people a little bit more than the two best ones so far are the Pfizer vaccines and the people that have already had it. And now everybody's hoping this 20 weeks makes it to like 70 or 80 weeks, right? I mean, nobody thinks it's going to go forever, but you'd like it to see what's SARS. For people who caught SARS, they had antibodies is roughly 2 years. I think I read that, Kevin. Most people don't think the COVID one will last 2 years. But right now it spreads 20 weeks to 2 years. So the fact, I mean, if I read come fall, or I mean come June, that all of a sudden these people are still okay, then we're pushing, you know, a year, which is pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that test to me is probably better than how the original tests were given for the drugs themselves, because it shows not only were they 90% after 3 weeks, they're 90% after 20 weeks, which is, you know, it also tells me that if we get to vaccinate, Maddie's convinced that we're doing this per day, and he's right, he's been watching, I haven't. If by, you know, May, we have vaccinated 100 million people, and another 70 or 80 million people have already had it, we're pushing 60% of the population, right? which is a lot. You know, I mean, it's not as good as 80, but it's a lot. So, I mean, I have every confidence that by summer, I think we're damn near over the hump. Now, what we
and I think by summer we're still wearing masks. And
well, that could be. And then now the question is
restricting restaurants and all of that kind of.
That I'm with you with, but I'm saying in terms of reality, I think we're pretty much over the hump. Now, what does that do to the market, and what does it do?
But you know, we're also what are we down like 40% in the daily case counts in the last 2 weeks? The last 3 weeks, or since 3 weeks ago. You know, why is that? Well, I don't know. I think if you go chart what seasonally happens with viral infections every single year, we're following the same pattern.
I think we are. The amount of people that got it in the last 5 or 6 weeks with some of these new strains, I think you've got a. I mean, in some areas it didn't have much of a problem, like the South Side of Chicago. They were inundated, but you know, people didn't die, and I think a lot of people have already had it, Kevin.
Well, and I hear a lot of people saying new strains. That's why you got to keep wearing masks and all that, because the new strains. And you know what? What do we know about new strains of everything? What do we know about mutations? They lose strength every time.
They lose strength and they get more contagious. But I'm saying we're seeing the spots where between the vaccines and people. Here's another thing. I mean, I want to talk a little more about the Super Bowl because is Budweiser the only people that are bailing, Matty? Just off the top of your head?
I haven't read anything about that, so I don't know. I didn't even know Budweiser was bailing.
Yeah, it's the first time ever, I think. Now, one Budweiser commercial. Well, we know 2-3 years ago, Viagra and those guys bailed because they went off patent. So who are the big advertisers? Pepsi in?
I have no idea. I haven't read anything about that.
I don't know. You know, and I'm not one who pays a lot of attention. There's a lot of people who like to sort of sit there and watch the ads during the commercials.
But it's big money. I mean, I don't know how you...
I don't care. I'll get up and go get something.
Well, Monday, maybe we'll talk about it. I don't know how you replace a Budweiser. I mean, that's boy. What were they? They were like.
That's a big spender. Just to wrap up, the burden of proof lies with the people who want to impose on others. And
you're showing your age with that one.
And the idea that if you can think it and be afraid of it, you get to, impose restrictions on others is nonsense. It's such a poor way to do it. And that's official policy. This is official policy from the top down.
Oh, yeah.
This is not just the some ninny in the grocery store yelling at you. This is right from the top down. You know, we're going to send masks to everybody. That's part of the grand plan now, is everybody's going to get sent a mask from the government.
I'm going to say that if we were part of that $160 billion for masks, gloves, and everything, if we got any of that stuff, we wouldn't have to do any of our other jobs. Can you imagine the graft that's in there?
Oh God, yeah.
That they're spending more on the mass vaccines than ever. It's as much as the entire federal budget was in 2000. $160 billion. All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. We'll talk next week about who won the Super Bowl and why we should have bet the winning team and not whatever we're going to bet. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 41. Come back, we have Mr. Carl Denninger. We got the labor numbers today, so Carl will be here.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 37. So that's about where we were when we came in. Actually, down a little bit from where we came in. We're up 22. Carl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It looks like our friends trading early morning futures are at least moderately positive about the report to come.
We're up so much yesterday. We're up every day 20 points when we walk in, and then we go higher from there. I mean this is the Weimar Republic all over again. I sure hope not, but it sure looks like it, doesn't it?
God, you know, when this insanity started, it's almost a year ago now. Remember?
Yep.
You know, about this time last year, right, was when the whole COVID thing broke, and I started covering it literally the day the impeachment went away. For like a week, I had dual reports, where like half my time was spent on one, half was spent on the other. And this, the very first thing, what was the government's very first answer? Throw money at it, right? Yeah. And that's all they've done since. And they've ignored the fact that money does not stop viruses, obviously.
Right.
Okay. That we have... You know, and everyone says this is a novel coronavirus, you know, this has never happened before. That's a load of bull. There is a scientific paper that says that the nasty set of recessions and depressions that came in the very late 1800s, which I have done a fair bit of research on because it went into the work that I did before I wrote Leverage, my book back in 2011, that was actually what is now OC48, which is a coronavirus that causes colds, and that was likely its emergence into the United States as a pandemic, and it killed a whole ton of people. And the worst part of it was that it wasn't a one shot. It wasn't, you know, one nasty wave like the 1918 flu was. That this was actually much worse, and that it kept coming back every couple of years.
I thought the 1918
one. We now understand that happens with coronaviruses because the antibodies wane off after a couple of years.
I thought the 1918 thing went through and came back deadlier.
Well, it did, but that was two waves. And actually, what we now know is that virtually every one of those deaths was not actually caused by the virus. It was caused by secondary bacterial infections, against which, of course, we had no defense because we didn't have antibiotics yet.
Right, but it was... God, can you imagine fighting a war, people getting wounded before penicillin?
Oh, yeah. If you got gut shot, you were going to die, and it was going to be horrible.
Yeah, it was a three-day event.
Arguably one of the worst possible ways to go. Better get shot in the head and have it be over with.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Before there were antibiotics, any sort of systemic infection that got going in your body was almost certain to kill you.
How effective, if at all, I know on open wound they used to do it, they used to pack people with it in World War II, how effective were sulfa drugs? They were effective at the site, at the open wound, where they weren't really effective in the bloodstream, or they meant, or, you know, more about
right. That was that was the problem, was that you'd end up with a septic shock issue, and I mean, it was and if you had a perforated colon or something like that, you were pretty much done.
Yeah, I mean, it was not you didn't want to get shot in a civil war. Oh God, or having a it didn't if you were a farmer and you cut yourself on a barbed wire, you were screwed. Didn't have any tetanus.
Yeah,
shots.
It was. Yeah, we had all. I mean, you know. We've come a long way in that regard, but I think it's one of the things I think is interesting though is that when you look at like the economic history and the correlations, and then you listen to what Biden's press secretary said yesterday, you folks had better sit down and wake up here, because she came out right out front and said this is never ending.
Well, yeah, but hopefully they'll ignore her after a while.
Well, people had better start ignoring her, and they better start doing it now, because you know, I mean, we've already screwed our kids out of 1 year's worth of everything, and that time cannot be recovered. The lost learning that has occurred will not be recovered.
She didn't get the job because she was impartial, Carl. She get the job because she's some group likes her politics regarding this thing.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, but this is, you know, what has infuriated me since this began is that there is no money in finding solutions that we already have and have reason to believe work. And this is where science and medical technology really, really have advanced. Okay, we can now take computer databases and search them, given the characteristics of a particular thing that's going on, whatever it is. And come up with 200 possible pharmacological agents, most of which have been around for 20 years. We know all about their safety profile. We know what kinds of bad things they can do to you if you use them. And that's because we've been using them for other things. And 95% of them are not going to work. Okay? But at one or two probably will. The problem is there's no money in investigating any of them.
Right. Right.
And so no one's going to do it, and yet we have all of these organs of so-called public health. We have all these non-profit medical centers and universities. We have the National Institutes of Health. We have the CDC. And that's at the federal level. And then you have colleges and universities and other so-called policy organs like Vanderbilt and IHME and Harvard, Johns Hopkins, all these places, Mayo. And every one of them runs around and takes advantage of the tax code, doesn't pay a penny in federal taxes, and yet they are the only ones with the $5 million necessary to run those studies.
As I do the show more and more, and I have learned people on here, the dichotomy of what goes on a daily basis is stunning to me. How is it you look at a government and they can't find their ass with both hands, it seems. Incompetent just about everywhere. Yet some parts of it are so organized and so driven to give money to certain people. I mean, yesterday got a guy here, one of my best traders, and he he's a grumpy old Irish guy, what can I say? And he's been concerned about the COVID. His family member had it and actually had a rough time with it. So he's, he's been keeping himself in, and he's looking around for the vaccine. Now, the guy's over 65. He's a veteran. You would think that there would be, this would be pretty easy, right? It's not. Okay. So I said, well, and one of the guys here that works, his brother just got the vaccine. His brother's like 70, a lot older than him. His brother had to drive. He made a reservation in the Walgreens in Peoria and drove down to Peoria and got his shot.
All the way to Peoria, yeah.
And, but he's a carpenter and he still does some side work, and he doesn't want to A, get it, or B, give it to anybody, right? I mean, it's all the right reasons. So he does this. So just to be a bump, just so I can give this guy some grief, I go on the Walgreens site yesterday. Carl, it is so organized somehow or another. You cannot, and again, there's a few of them. There's CVS, there's Mariano's, there's somebody else. How do these people with this incredible efficiency manage to get it to where, I mean, I went to this Walgreens site. If you don't sign up to be a preferred Walgreens, if you don't basically don't give them, you know, the length and width and of your male appendage, you can't get through to make an appointment. And like, what is going on here? This is not like come down to the gym for your polio shot. Nobody wants your name or your email address or your phone number so they can contact you for the next 10 years. They're just a bunch of people that need a polio. How does a government that can't do anything right, somehow or another, the Walgreens and the CVS, get in this thing at an early age where no doctor's got a shot, right? I mean, they're talking about maybe giving them to dentists. If the doctors don't have them, what are you giving them to dentists for? I mean, there's so much crazy crap going on, and yet, if you're the one that's focused on, we can't give a vaccine here if it's not Walgreens or CVS. They got some very attractive, very well-spoken young lady on TV. She's on CNBC for an hour and a half. She's from Walgreens. They're going to do this. What has Walgreens even got to do with this? Another pharmacy.
Because Walgreens wants the data.
I understand that, but how is that organized?
But this is the problem. This is what we've allowed to have happen, okay? We've taken what should be public health considerations, and we've turned them into they're not that at all, but they sound like it. And we let people run that BS.
But how does...
The same thing happened with this whole debate about hydroxychloroquine. The same thing happened with the whole thing with masks. Okay, we were told in September by the head of the CDC under oath in congressional testimony that if we wore masks for 6 or 8 weeks, not only would the cases stop happening, but that it would be permanently under control. And what happened this winter?
It got worse.
Well, he lied.
Well, okay, but here's what I'm trying to find here, Carolyn. I don't know if you've listened this week, but I'm searching for the rung in my business where instead of the regulators coming after you, they try and bail you out and help you. And I'm looking for how is it that if you and I tried to be a pharmacist, you know, say we had a big independent pharmacy, where Carlin Chief's Pharmacy, how we would even get these vaccines, I have no idea, especially in Illinois. Even in West Virginia, it seems like they all got it. And how is it that the Walgreens somehow, what's the mechanism? Is it the right lobbyist, the right day? They anticipate this? Do they go to the right committee? Who even writes the damn thing these days? I mean, how do you get your name on that $160 billion shot for masks and gloves and hospital gowns and all the other? How do you get your guy into that thing? I mean, somehow people do it, and they're amazingly efficient at it. And then the government, you know, somehow there's pieces of government that are amazingly efficient, and the rest of it, they look like a bunch of stumble bumps, it seems to me. Efficient, not the stuff we want them to do.
I think you're right, but on the other hand, I think there's something that needs to be, you know, one of the things I've poked at for a long time with this, generally with this, is that the medical industry as a whole, as I've pointed out several times on your show, has gone from 3.5-4% of GDP to 20%. And every single dollar of that money that is spent is parasitic. It produces nothing. Now, it supports people who produce things, but by itself, it produces nothing. It's pure consumption. See, it's from an economic perspective, it's equivalent to, you know, you going out in the front yard and lighting $100 bills on fire. The problem is that monster has gotten so large and so embedded into the federal government. And it has driven every piece of policy. We have the reason you can stand up on national television and run this BS about healthy at any size. And you've seen that, right? I mean, you want to get canceled, all you got to do is say you're fat.
Yeah.
In public to somebody, right? Instantaneously. Bang, you're a bigot, you need it, you know, get them off the air, never again. And it doesn't matter what field of study you're in. If you make a statement like that, you're done. And yet the reality is it's
spatially challenged, my friend, spatially challenged.
Well, you use whatever, you know, but the point is this. Why is it, when you look at the data, you look at the actual death data out of the New York coroner's office, which, you know, I mean, that's a science-based organization, right? I mean, this is what they do, is collect data and disseminate it. You look at the data out of there, in almost all of the enhanced risk of this thing really hammering you, not all of it, because bad things occasionally happen, you know, on a random basis. I get hit by an asteroid on my way to get the mail.
By the way, skinny people die too.
But almost all of it is a result of lifestyle decisions.
Skinny people die too.
They do, and you know, but you know what? We're talking percentages here, okay? And that's from a public health perspective. Remember that public health is not about individuals, ever. Public health is about the aggregate body politic.
I would agree with that, yeah. All right.
That's what it has to be about, because you can't control individual outcomes. But what you can do is control statistical outcomes.
You know what you're
and
saying?
That's what public health is supposed to be about.
What you're saying is the exact same argument I made about betting on games for the state. It's all about my 10%. It's not about pleasure. It's not about people enjoying themselves. It's a tax. Right?
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I mean,
that's the thing, though, Tom, is that that's been totally thrown away. Okay? Now all we're doing is we're trying to find a way for people to affirm themselves while telling them to lock themselves in their house. What kind of insanity is that?
Well, if you wouldn't mind commenting, we'll shift gears just a hair. Earlier in the show, and maybe too often, I'm obviously very concerned about this inflation issue. And what we're seeing now is what you're just describing is essentially areas becoming more and more compacted. Okay? So if only Walgreens, CVS, and five places give out the vaccine, and oh, by the way, they now gain access to all my information, where I'm going to get nothing but things from Walgreens every day if I decide to go there for the vaccine. And I have to basically give away my private parts stuff. That is an amazing advantage. And when you start having some inflation, now if there's only four drugstores left, and combine that with the fact that the state of Illinois doesn't pay for a year in their Medicaid, so, there's no way you and I, even you, wealthy dude, 1%er kind of guy, there's no way you're going to be in the business of giving somebody a prescription for $150 that costs you $120 to buy, and you take a year to get paid.
You'll go bankrupt if you do that.
Yeah. Unless daddy or mom left you like a bazillion dollars that you're just so damn stubborn, you stay in the business, right? There's no reason for you to do it economically other than the fact that you're a pharmacist and you like helping people. But, so, now you combine, you and I have had this debate. I said, one of the only places I know that are competitive are restaurants and bars. Now they're not. Because you've taken 80% of them in Chicago that don't have a big out. The guy who has the next door property, he can put the tent up. I'll bet his prices are up 25% in a year. I mean, all of a sudden, whatever you do just compounds on the thing you just did. You let the state of Illinois put all the small people out of business. Now you got four big people left. There's Walmart, but there's six big people left. So now you say, okay, we're only going to give vaccines to these people. Well, there's no way that you're pushing to make this area more competitive. You're becoming you're becoming part of the process that's making it less and less. So 10 years from now, you wonder why prescription drug prices are up, not to mention the fact you only have a few, makers of those things left. Why are people shocked, Carl? Why are people shocked? They're the ones that caused it.
Well, yeah, and the thing that gets me though is that people think that there's something good that comes out of this. I don't know what they're smoking, to be honest with you, because when you get down to it, big, large business, let's face it, the logistics issues with offshoring your labor and, having your call center be in India somewhere, right, or whatever have you, is a job for those people that have large logistical organizations, just by virtue of the scale involved. So there is that aspect of it. Then you have the fact that the lowest price for labor is always zero, whether you like it or not. And if you can find some way to do that effectively, where you're essentially enslaving people, and you can make the numbers work on it, you're going to do it. If there's a legal way to do that, business is about making money, right? I mean, it's not about being nice. So, what have you done to yourself? You think that this is in some way a benefit. Well, guess what? Your job's gone. The people who allegedly do not have skills started there, all right, and yet, How many of those people really did have skills? Guys that actually put together cars and things like this. Well, guess what? Now it's some guy in Mexico doing it. And then you think learn to code is a way around this. Well, I got some bad news for you. It's not, because now you have the H-1Bs being flooded into the place and you have the job shops over in India that are doing it for $3 an hour, which you can't live on.
Well, what is it that causes people that we elect or hire, the administration, like Kevin was mentioning earlier, if you listen in, it's not the politicians now that are lying. It's It's the bureaucracy. It's our employees that are lying to us, which is right. Which is somewhat different, I think. It's one thing to have a politician saying he's going to lower taxes and he doesn't. It's quite another for somebody to be screwing around with the CPI number. I think.
Right.
You know, I mean, who knows, who cares what I think, but this is, they should know that these are roads you can't go down, Carl, because if you do, they're dead ends. You can't just be sprinkling money at people. Now, the only way you should be able to, your motivation would be, is because inflation is such an uneven thing, you could conceivably, and I honestly do think that there is a, I'm not going to say they're not all wrong from what they observe, because every time somebody, no matter which side of the political fence they are, makes some comment that maybe to you or I or to Maddie or whoever or to listeners sounds incredibly stupid, right? I hate to ever call somebody stupid, but people that aren't stupid can say stupid things, right? I mean, I'm sure I have at one point or another. And,
sure.
But the point is, what I'm trying to do now is the new chief. I'm trying to realize what they saw that made them make that stupid comment. And, so obviously, if you're on the left, if you look at a right winger and he hates this or hates this person, hate is too strong of a word anyway, but still, if they do, or the other way around, if you look to see what they saw to make them think that way, maybe their solution is screwed up, but probably their observation was pretty much spot on. And they just went, you look at an AOC taking a shot at whatever she takes a shot at. And she manages to get on TV, probably because she's good looking, but she also is a representative. And so she gets on there. If you look at to see what she sees to make something, her solutions may be very poorly thought out, and you're in my opinion, but it doesn't mean that what she saw, her observation was bad. I mean, she's seeing an awful few people getting an awful lot of the dough. And I was reading about the, 1929, I should maybe have maybe tweet this out. I read a very good thing, and I saved it here, I think, about the crash of 29, that if you go back and look at the history and read everything that started happening from like 1918 on, and the economic mistakes and the economic disparity and all the stuff that was happening and all the different times that the market looked like it was going to go down and J. Pierpont Morgan ran in and propped it back up or did something. That it,
right.
it wasn't a one-off. It was inevitable. It was absolutely inevitable. Now, I'm looking at what I'm seeing right now, and I'll tell you, if we continue to have not much in the way of raises for people where they can't keep up with this inflation, we have people that are savers can't keep up with the inflation on a risk-free rate. And that you pour money and you drive the market up, and everybody just wants their piece of the market because it's going up. I mean, and all of a sudden, this I know, Carol, that if that's what happens, it's going to end poorly. I just know it. And yet, I don't want it to end poorly. But we're doing everything we possibly can. It's like we want that outcome. I mean, it's like 1929. If the government wanted the crash to happen or the depression, they couldn't have acted any better to make it happen. And we're doing the same thing.
Well, you're right. You're right. And, that's one of the things that goes along with this, is that when you concentrate not just wealth in terms of who gets results, okay, by government policy, but when you take concentration within industry and you destroy the ability of people to have small businesses and actually make a go of it and be successful, you do the kind of things that we've done over the last year, where Walmart and Amazon are the winners and the guy on the corner is out of business and then there's a for lease sign on the building that he was in. When you do that over an extended period of time, and we've been doing 25, 30 years on a relentless basis, the result is going to be a foldback and a crash, because eventually the carry costs get to the point that you're basically playing spinning plates. Okay, and somebody eventually trips the stick. We did it back in 2007, 2008, and instead of solving the problem and forcing those excesses out and all the people who ran their BS and their lies, throwing them in jail, like what happened with the SNL crisis, instead, we turned around, we bailed them out and rewarded them. What, do you think they're not going to do it again?
Well, the solution for the banks screwing up was to make sure the banks got so much money that even if they screwed up, they wouldn't affect the Fed, and the Fed could blame for it.
Well, yeah, but it comes from you.
Yeah, it comes from us, yeah. But I'm saying, but that is the solution.
That's the problem. Is that, you know, the only way to do that is to steal the actual value from you.
Well, she's not a dumb lady at all, or she wouldn't have that job. Margaret Brennan was interviewing the mayor of El Paso, and I'm driving along, and it's a good thing there wasn't any adult beverages in the car. We had to take a swig, even though it was Sunday morning. She's asking the guy, what about bars and restaurants and any other thing? And the guy says, this is the mayor of El Paso. He says, well, we've done studies here. They're not federal stuff. We have, you know, we have colleges here. He goes, we've done studies. We're convinced that the spread of the germs, obviously home is where they're spreading because they're sending people home.
Right.
And he goes, and they're actually spreading a lot in big box stores, probably is bad or worse than restaurants and bars.
Well, actually, we know it's worse because they've traced all that stuff in a number of places, including Nashville, and they could only trace 1% to hospitality businesses.
Right. Well, anyway, so the guy says, and she says, well, why don't you close those? He goes, well, I can't. The pressure to close a Walmart, right. You know, you can't. He goes, that cat's out of the bag. If we close those places, you know, we got like nobody else. And then she said something I'm sure she would take back. If we played it for her, she'd probably have a laugh over it. She goes, well, why don't you close twice as many as the other places to make up for it? I almost ran into a tree. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's basically what they did.
It's basically what they did, yeah. But I mean, how could you? I mean, like I said, there's no way that if she heard that she said that, it's like something I would have said a week ago, and I said, I can't believe that.
By the way, NFP's out.
Oh, okay.
Plus 49,000.
Well, what were we looking at? That's pretty bad, I think.
That's pretty bad, although the unemployment rate was down by 4 ticks, believe it or not.
Which we know is all BS. We'll come back after break.
So I don't have the internals yet, but that's just the headline.
SP Futures up 14. We'll be scrambling to get these numbers. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us. I'm going through these numbers. Just so you know, the word from our producer is, Mr. Matt Weber, because these numbers are very perplexing, that 500,000 people moved to Mexico last month. And we're not sure that that's the answer, but that's one of the first ones
I don't think heard. It is either, but that's what I'd do.
Yeah, a lot of bad
go
ideas.
Somewhere warm where they don't care what you do. It sounds pretty good.
I think the dollar probably goes a hair further, too. Just saying. I'll bet a shot of tequila down there does not cost you $8.
You're probably right about that.
S&P futures up 14.50. NASDAQ futures up 42, so they're remarkably sort of unchanged after these numbers came out. Added 49,000 jobs. The number was 50, as expected, so right on the number. But the unemployment rate dropped to 6.4. We'll go through those in a second. Dow up 153. Over in Europe, DAX up 26, down 0.2%. FTSE unchanged. CAC around up 55. That's 1%. So they're off the races there for some reason. Nobody else is. Nikkei up 437, 1.5%. Shanghai down 5.2%. Hang Seng up 175.6%. Bonds, 10-year 1.16. So that's up 11 basis points, actually. Bund up 2 basis points to minus 0.43. Japan pretty much unchanged at positive 0.06. Oil on the drive up 47 cents, 56.80. Brent up 52 cents, 59.36. Natural gas up a dime, 303. Sure has a lot to do with this coal spell. RBOB up 1 cent to 165. Gold up 550, 1796. It was higher last time we did this. Silver up 22 cents. So minor rallies there in the metals. Copper up 3 cents. Maybe we got for Trevi Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Earlier crashes on the outbound Kennedy and on the inbound Stevenson have all been cleared, so that's good news. Still some resulting congestion from those, but the accidents have been cleared. So we're okay on the area expressways as far as crashes and stalls are concerned. Like I said, some delays on the outbound Kennedy out near Nagel. Inbound side, as you get close to the circle, there's a little bit of red, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Eisenhower's looked pretty good all morning. Same for the inbound Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet, so that's good news as well. Off the expressways, we have a couple of issues to report out west. One is on Route 83 at Hodges Road. There is a crash. And then directly west of there, as you get near Wheaton and in that area, Roosevelt Road at Lorraine Road, there is an accident as well. That's Roosevelt Road, Route 38 there out in the western suburbs. One other issue in the northwestern suburbs, Bartlett Road at Route 59, there is a crash. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but very cold temperatures as we begin a run of cold weather that's going to last for the foreseeable future. In fact, we're not going to hit above 20 degrees for at least the next 7 days, and that's for highs. And then for the next 10 days, which is as far as the weather forecast looks ahead, we will not come close to freezing, but we will eclipse 20. So it's going to be cold for our highs in the teens for the foreseeable future. And then our lows will be around zero, if not below zero, overnight, including tonight. Today we'll reach a high of 16, but right now it is clear and 13 degrees downtown with a wind chill of negative 5. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, the Blackhawks with a nice win last night. They beat Carolina 6-4. Coyotes topped the Blues 4-3. Not much for basketball last night. Bulls were off there at the Magic tonight. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Suns were off as well. They'll host Detroit tonight. That's in Arizona at 7 p.m. Arizona time. Chief.
So, Manny, you're complaining about the weather. The people in Russia...
I'm not complaining about it, just reporting it.
Yes, well, you were complaining earlier, and so was I. So why shouldn't you complain? It's cold.
It's always cold in February.
What's the place in Russia that's like that? The coldest place, city on Earth? It's normally 45 degrees below zero. I was reading the other day, they actually hit like 65, and they were all pissed off. Like, yeah. 45 is okay, but 65 is not, you know, it's too...
Yeah, no thanks.
What can you even have exposed skin at that... hit that number? Rotted frostbite instantly or
well,
what?
Well, just to piss myself off, I was tweeting with Kenny because he has an event coming up next week, and we tweeted it out. A free markets discussion and Q&A next week that you can dial in remotely. And he's down in Boca, and so of course I said, you know, what's the weather in Boca today? Oh, it's 80 and sunny.
Yeah, that's...
And I was just like, God damn it, why did I ask?
Well, you know, we need a... The weird part is if you were to say to yourself, self, all I really need in Chicago is like 3 or 4 weeks away in the winter and I can handle it. This wouldn't be the 3 or 4 weeks you'd pick. It'd probably be January. You'd be back by now because this is unusual
in February. No, it's not. Are you kidding me? It's always cold in February.
Well, I'm in
the vortex every time. It seems like it's end of January, early February.
Maybe that has changed. When I was your age, the coldest night of the century was Christmas Eve.
I think that's rare.
Maybe.
December in November, December is usually, not always, but I mean, usually much more mild. And then January is sort of in the middle. And then February, to me, is always the worst. And then it starts to get better in March.
Why don't you, when McCown and I are fighting over these numbers, why don't you Google, like 20 coldest days in Chicago, and I'll bet you 80% of them are in December or January.
I can do that. Well, you're getting 2 months. I mean,
well,
the winter is only three, so you're just, so of course the majority are going to be in December, January.
Well, I'm assuming,
for God's sake.
I'm assuming nothing happened. There hasn't been any below zero in the first week of December of you.
Yeah, I know, but if you get 2 months and I get one all month, right. I'm going to guess, yes, the majority
I'm
going
to say
months.
From December 20th to the end of January.
I can look.
All right, bud. All right, this is the part where I look at the employment numbers here, and Carl tells me I'm looking at the wrong page. But the one I'm looking at here, Carl, the A1 thing, this is odd for me because we have – the whole thing is triggered by 400,000 people leaving the population and 400,000 people leaving the workforce.
Right. Well, yeah, no, it's the population survey. But remember, January, this is what happens in January every year. Okay, and oh, by the way, just in case you think this is like the COVIDs, all right, because, you know, people are like, well, you know, they've been overstating the population because a bunch of people died, right? We have 400,000 people supposedly died. All right, so let me point out that last year, this was before the COVIDs, right?
Yep.
Okay, December, the working age population was 260,181,000. January was 259,502. That's 600,000 people that magically disappeared, right?
Right.
Okay, well, guess what? This year it was 400.
Well, where do they go?
Well, because the BLS makes it up and then uses the ACS and then census year is a census because they're both the same. The ACS is the one that they run every year, and it's going on all the time. You may get this thing in the mail at some point, and you know, hey, listen, we've got this huge, you know, 30-page thing we want you to fill out. That's where they get the corrections, that those are done once a year. But that happens every year, and it did this year. January is also always a firing month, and it was this year. -12,300 on the household, but the one that I think people ought to pay attention to is that the population corrected number, the 12-month run rate, is down just a scooch from last month, and that includes all those population adjustments and everything else. Okay, so in other words, in real terms, there was a problem. Now, the internals of the report are kind of interesting. There's some things that they look weird. All right, yeah, I mean, when you get the, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You're right, it doesn't. Less than high school educated people did not lose anything this month. Now, normally, those are the people who all get fired in January because they're the temporary help. All right? That didn't happen. Everybody else got it in the shorts to some degree, and the people who got it the worst, which is a little odd, are both high school graduates and those people with up to an associate's, although actual higher educated people with degrees did get it as well, did get hammered, not as badly, but they did. And so that's kind of an interesting thing, but then you look at the hours worked number, and the hours worked numbers were actually reasonably good. So there's one other thing in here, though, that I really don't like, and that is that we had a significant gain in people who lost jobs on a permanent basis. All right, so these are not people who were laid off because of some kind of temporary thing. These are jobs that are gone, not coming back. And there was a fairly significant increase in that this month.
Well, the gross numbers that I'm seeing here, they look pretty weird. We've got the people, the employed population, those are people over 16, right? Those are the civilian non-institutional population.
Right. 16 plus not in jail,
right.
Basically.
And, right, so that's, I've got that down, 350,000 people.
Right.
And I've got the amount of people, in the workforce, or the people that are would like to be working, let's put it that way, down 400,000 people, which is a lot. I've got the people who actually are working, this is a household survey, is up 200,000 people. All right, so, and then with the amount of employed is down, the unemployed is down 600,000 people, right? It's a lot.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The unemployment rate's down 4 ticks.
But the last column, people don't know what they're doing, is like exactly the same, which normally, if you come off the unemployed number, you go into the part that we're not counting you.
You go on the non-labor force number, right.
But
exactly.
here you're strictly, you're out of the country somehow. And since we can't go anywhere, how the hell do we lose 500,000 people? We couldn't even put 500,000 people, unless 500,000 people walk through Mexico the other way through the wall, you can't even go anywhere. So how do we lose 500,000 people?
Well, January is the we fix all the lies we told in the previous 12 months month.
Okay.
Okay, that's normally, so this is, I warn people about this all the time, be very careful with the internals and the January numbers, and this is the reason, because the BLS, you know, there will be people running around that claim that the reason that the non-institutional population went down is because all these people died of COVID. And you're going to hear that. I bet that's on CNBC within the next half hour. And it is BS. Every year, virtually every year, the BLS throughout the year overstates the non-institutional population, and in January they fix it. And this year is actually less of an adjustment than last.
Okay, I got another question for you. Because these numbers are getting really big, Carl. I watch this. I look at this U.S. debt clock, and I'm just kind of wondering where these guys get this number. Now they've got official unemployed. Now they're not updated for today yet. Curse on them, but they're not updated for today. They've got it at 10,580,000, which was last month's number, right? Yeah, but they have their something.
Yeah,
but now they have something called the actual unemployed, which are people. Let me get the actual definition they have, which I don't seem to be able. It's people who are doing part time work for economic reasons, how do you get that number? How do you know if somebody is is total unemployed plus all marginally attached workers plus total employed part-time for economic reasons? It's the U6 number. How do they get that number? You almost have to interview people for that, don't you?
Well, you do, and the thing is that U6 is arguably a more accurate read of exactly what's going on.
But the number's huge. It's like almost 19 million versus 10 million.
Yeah, it's huge, but the thing is, it's always larger. But my biggest concern here is that when I look at these numbers on a 12-month rolling basis, we had the official number was, -23, right? In the middle of this thing, right?
Yeah.
We've stopped making progress effectively because we're in that -8.6 area, and we've been that way since October.
Well, you're even on this thing I'm looking at, what Carl's saying here, the March number, these are people employed. Again, this is a household, so it's not as accurate as what Carl's telling you, but we went in March to April, we went from 155 down to 133, which is, that's right when everybody in this thing all hit, and everybody got laid off, right? So we went down 22 million people like in 1 month. Then it went 137, 142, 143, 147. But now we really stuck on this 149.6, 149.8, 149.8, 150 even. So we're kind of right in the same spot since the end of September is what you're talking about, Carl. It's not improving like we want it to be improving here. We've made really no progress in 4 months. Really, I guess you just said that. So I'm just...
That's right. And against population, which is what I'm looking at, and I'm looking at the 12-month run rate.
Right.
Okay. And the 12-month run rate has not improved at all. And in fact, if you adjust for population, you got the same answer. And this is even with the, you know, the fix of the fudge factors that always comes in January on the non-institutional population. And I look at both those numbers and they both tell me the same thing, which means they're probably right. And that is that essentially the last 4 months, there's been no job growth at all.
Well, the funny part, you're right. I'm looking, let's go January to January here. I hope I'm not confusing people because I'm confusing myself. The part that I don't get here, they've got us with 4.5 million less people than last January in the labor force. Or so we've gone from, we had 158 million people, 158.6 employed last January. This January we're 150. So we're down 8.5 million people, 8.6 million people in the, that are working, correct? And, 4.5 of those people are in unemployed, and 4.5 have given up and are out of the labor force, right? But the part right. What happens to the 4 million that used to be? I guess I don't get this part, Carl. There's 259 million people over 16 last January, and there's 260 this year. So we're up some, which you'd expect.
259.5 to 260.850. Yeah.
All right, but the next column, which is a civilian labor force, somehow has dropped 4 million people. How the hell, where did they go?
Oh, good Lord. the wonders of the BLS, all right? I mean, but my one number, if you just take one number out of the entire series, employment population ratio tells you how close you are to the federal government being able to be sustaining. Okay. And that number has not moved. It is at 57.7 as of October, and it's at 56.9 as of today. And it always drops in January because January is a firing month. But it dropped by a normal amount, okay, 4 ticks, which is pretty normal. But we are in the same place that we were in September.
Yes.
And there's been no gain.
Yeah, but now that I'm looking at this, we lost 20 million people. Well, somehow people just dropped out of the labor force totally. You can go up in age, you can't go down, can you? the numbers that are
right. We were at 96. We were at 96.04 for not in labor force in January of last year, and now we're at 101.618.
Yeah, it's
a big number.
Yeah, it's a big number. I mean, the part of people that have the job. What I look for, Carl, and you try and put it together through all these numbers, is you look for the health of the regular person. Can somebody, the median person, can he or she work? Can they make enough to save a little bit? But the hospitalization is a big problem in there, because if you're not getting it covered at work, there's no way anybody, a median worker, can survive. If you're actually paying for it. I mean, there's no way. I guess, if you're, God help you, if you're the person who makes $52,000, so you're $1,000 over to Obamacare thing? Or something like that?
You're dead long before then, because basically your second 20 grand that you earn as a single person has an effective federal tax rate of over 50%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's untenable. I mean, you basically, there is a hole as a single person between about $20,000 and $40,000, where for all intents and purposes you don't make any money.
Right. It's really done poorly, and I always sound like I'm shifting subjects, Tara, but to me, they're all the same subject. They're all general incompetence and things that somehow you can't talk about. This whole thing with this GameStop, I'm going to guess that if I were to be able to look at the people at Robinhood and God knows where else, they're trading this thing. But there are people trading all the place. My clients never want to trade anything like this. All want to get involved in this thing. And I'm going, guys, what are you out of your mind? But anyway, but it's like talk most of them down. But I know that the biggest winner here is going to be the government. And I'm the only guy, who knows, I don't listen to everybody's show. I'm the only guy that says, by the way, the person that bought this piece of Duke at $5 or $10 and sold it at $400 owes $390 in capital gains taxes.
Right.
and the person who bought it at $400 and is going to sell it at $5 gets to take $3,000 out. Even if he lost $50,000, he or she, it's going to be.
He still gets hosed, right.
I mean, it's going to, how many years? The rest, it's like, 18 years? you get to take the thing $3,000 a year off? The big winner.
Well, the good news is it doesn't expire. The bad news is it's only $3,000 a year.
But it expires when you expire.
Well, yeah. which, by the way, the government loves a lot.
Oh, God, yeah. But I'm saying the fact that that number is the same as when the Dow was 800 when I got in the business is unconscionable. Yet, how many revenue bills, how many debates, how many CNBC, talking heads have you seen? Not one person mentions that number. Why?
Well, because if you go there, then you start talking about the fact that we have certain classes of people like hedge funds and SPACs and other people who have figured out how to game it. And guess what? The little guy can't do it because they don't have the $800 an hour lawyers.
Well, I think at some point, I honestly believe this, Colin, that what happened during the 20s is you can't let that happen again because it's just not, it's not like, I'm jealous of the 1%er. I wish I was the head of Commonwealth Edison. God knows what he does for God knows how many million dollars a year. Or I'd like to be the think tank up in People's Gas. Who knows what they pay their guys. But it's not just jealousy. It's unhealthy for certain people to make an awful lot of money that is, quote, not competitive. If it was competitive, if you had Edison up there at Commonwealth Edison and he was making an invention a year, I don't care if you paid a guy $20 million, he's probably worth 50, right? But that's not what you got. You have institutions and bureaucracies that people that are actually doing stuff are making, one-tenth of what people above them are making, when I know that in the late 70s that number used to be 3 or 4 to 1, right? Or 5 to 1 or something. Actually, it's not even 10. It could be 1,000 to 1 now. It used to be, the chairman at Pullman made $250,000, and if you hustled and did a little overtime in the factory, you made 25. So it's 10 to 1. Now it's what, a million? It's 1,000 to 1?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm saying,
no, it's crazy. And the thing is that when you do this, and then you start pumping credit into the economy, because the government and the Fed, they can't print money, they can print credit. Your Visa card works the same as does a 20 in your wallet, but they're not the same thing.
Well, you are actually getting, if you take an average, a lot of what the money they've sent out, and this is an average, this is a median, I can't get a median savings number, but your average savings per family has gone up dramatically this year.
Well, except remember, savings is not really savings. They count debt pay downs as savings.
Okay. Yeah,
So if you take $20,000 off your credit card by paying that down because you don't have anything better to do with the money, right? Because you can't go anywhere, you can't do anything. That's considered savings.
Well, but it shouldn't be counted that way because savings equal investment.
I understand that, but the point is the government deliberately counts it that way, and it's a lie.
Well, my point is, it's not just that I want to see certain people make less and other people may make more. I mean, that's my opinion, and nobody cares. But what I'm saying, economically, it's just not healthy. I honestly believe, Carl, that you're better off with 1,000 people buying bass boats than you are one guy, Carl Allen, built by himself a yacht that's 400 feet long. And I just think if you throw inflation and you throw some stuff on top of the person who hasn't gotten a raise, and you throw inflation on top of somebody who's getting zero in the bank, and you only say that you've got to be in a market, but don't worry, it goes up every day. I just don't see how that that dog hunts for very long. It's lasted longer than I thought, but I don't want to see it collapse either, because I got a lot of customers that are along. I got them protected, but it's still not, they're not 100% protected. But it's just not right, Carl. But I also know that it feels so good for the people that are enjoying it that it's not going to end. You're not going to have a city council vote for 30 wards instead of 50. It's just not going to happen.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's part of the problem is that, like, that just, and just as an example coming out of the federal government, there are now two state legislatures that were attempting, Ohio, I think, was one of them. They were going to override their governor's emergency declaration and cancel it, right? Which, by the way, exigent circumstances expired a long time ago, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's been a year.
Yeah.
All right. So let's put this through the legislature where it belongs, because that's how you're supposed to make laws. And you've had plenty of time to do it. Well, they got a call from the Biden administration. The leaders of the legislature in both houses got calls from the Biden administration and said, if you do this, every single federal dollar under the CARES Act disappears.
Are these people did nothing but bitch about Trump, and they're doing the same thing.
Oh, they're worse.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Trump was, you know, doing all kinds of nasty arm-twisting type things, which is why you had all of these lockdowns and mask orders and everything else to begin with. But the Biden administration is, if anything, worse. And oh, by the way, this stuff with the National Park Service and the TSA and the CDC and, you know, masks and all federal buildings and everything else, you realize that's illegal, right? You have to go through the Administrative Procedures Act, which says you have to publish it in the Federal Register and you have to take comment period. There were many of Trump's things that he did that were stopped under that basis.
Carl, we got to dash, but I think you need to know we don't want no stinking procedures anymore. We're doing just what we want to do. We'll talk to you next week, buddy. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 36. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.